Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest, retired NHL veteran enforcer, TV personality for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and one of the last gladiators, Jody Shelley. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nast?
What's up, Rigorilla? What are you doing besides just hanging on? Just by a thread, staying awake this late.
Barely
keeping me. You're keeping me up. I got the king down here laying under the desk because Uncle Riley was snoozing.
Dude, I am way past my bedtime.
You are
ready to shut totally. This thing down. You keep me up with your antics.
Oh my God. I'll tell you what's keeping me up is looking at this bobblehead. Look at that thing. Look at this guy. Do I look that blind with my glasses?
Those are some thick love it. Frames, dude.
Hey,
neck is looking a little unstaged.
Hey, that's because I'm checking out the stuff going on around me, man. Yeah. Woo, look at her.
Clay?
Ooh,
what do we got
look at
there?
Her. Yeah, look at right. her. I don't know how my buddy Sal Scotto made it for me. And I
that is beautiful.
My other buddy,
it's a work Andy of art.
Matola Motz dropped it off. It's got the Nasty Knuckles hat.
Yeah, for those that are not watching this, Nasty's got a clay looking bobblehead that is rocking the Nasty Knuckles jersey. And
thick this is
frame
the stand.
Glasses and a puck.
With rigs
my
on
face
the bottom.
On it. Oh, look at that.
But this,
that's recent, too, because that's from the Warriors game, that picture right there.
I think when I was it with is. You. You're right. It wow, is. You're right. Because you don't have any black eyes in this one. You have Rocky Raccoon. And these pucks, they're magnets, so it sits on there.
Oh, no way. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. So, Sal, man, I appreciate
homemade
you,
homemade bobblehead that is looks identical, Nast. I mean,
it kind of does. It
built the same way.
Up. Yeah.
Same neck size. The extra
hey, at least
wobble.
He can check everything out, man.
Your oh, yeah.
Head's
yeah,
on a
his
swivel,
head's on a
boys.
Swivel for sure, yeah.
Oh, man.
He's more of the east and west instead of the north and south, you know. He's
yes,
looking.
Exactly.
He's peeking. He's peeking around.
Exactly. Oh, man. But anyway, big weekend for us coming up. Got a big game.
Yeah, Big Tilly.
Big Tilly. We're playing the Tier 1 team, the Philadelphia Flyers Warriors team. Our good buddies, we're all buddies with them. And we mixed Riley and our men's league team, the Natty Ice, along with another team that I get to play for here and there, the Bauer Brews. So we had to pick up a few bodies to try to keep up with these Warriors guys. And Riles wanted to call out Devin Riccio, because I think you guys are going to tilly it up right off the hop, aren't
Center
we?
Center ice there, Devin. Let's go, buddy.
Woo! Dev, get ready, baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to break into the ice, get ready for the season, right? Yep. Got to bring up some hacks to
Do
that kind of grunt work, but should be a lot of fun. You're like Jackie Moon, you know, like the general manager, coach,
The
jerseys, put the teams together.
Yeah, man.
Love it, man.
I'm excited about it. I don't think I'm going to have a cage with a bear in it, though. Like Jackie Moon. Although, that was pretty damn funny. Anyway.
Oh, man.
Anyway. That is a great movie, by the way. I don't know what made you think of that, but that is a fun movie.
Oh, just because you put this whole thing together, man. You're all over it, pulling the squads together, the jerseys.
Should be 19,000 in the building.
Yeah, exactly. Put all this together for a few families that you come check out a bunch of scrubs beating on each other.
It's going to be fun, though, man.
I can't wait, man.
Appreciate our boys inviting us and having us there, man. It's an honor, again, to skate with those guys.
A good time. Finally recovered from the ball hockey. It'll be a good time. And get the pins,
it only
pins
took
going.
You 2 weeks.
Oh, man.
2 weeks. Don't forget, we have a men's league game after this game. So I don't want to hear it. Don't even go. You're not missing the first three games, bro.
Man.
Dude.
You give me a back-to-back on Sunday?
Hey, I'm giving you a back-to-back.
Dude, you've got it in you, bro. See what I can pull off, man.
Okay. Good.
I'll bring the urban CBD so I can recover in time.
There you go, man. We could throw you in a little ice bath and you'll be good to go, bro.
Speaking of recovery, though, I got a few of the Fly guys banged up, eh?
Yeah, so few of the guys are not the start you're looking for, especially Hollywood. Kevin Hayes, our buddy's out 6 to 8, it looks like. Another issue with, I believe, is growing, right, Riggs?
Abdominal area.
And Wade Allison suffered a sprained high ankle sprain, I believe, in that second game of the rookies had, which the Flyers played really well in. From what I heard, I didn't get to see much of it. I did see some highlights.
Tough bounce. I saw a little highlight. It was kind of hard to see, but it looked like he was in the corner there and
had
some sort of interesting little collision there. But
yeah, tough bounce. I was worried it was a knee for him because he's had a couple issues there. Knock wood. They're all behind him now. Let's hope. Right. Knock wood. And then our buddy Big Sam had a banged his knee up a little bit. I guess he's having it cleaned up.
A little tweaker there. You know, it's probably the necessary evil of dealing with two ACL tears in the last 2 years, right? I don't know. I mean, we sent him a little message there, and he texted back that he banged it up, but it wasn't that bad. And that bad in Sam's world right now is a little tweaker, a little scope, get some loose debris out, and be back good to go in 6 weeks. You know, so it's one of those things. I've seen this before, and that type of injury as well as some others. As far as you gotta clean out the shit. You know, that's a lot of scar tissue in there, a lot of healing's been done in the last 2 years. So get some out and be good to go. So I know it's just a scope. It's not a real legitimate, you know, open surgery. Wish all those guys the best, you know. It's just part of the game, man. I mean, Sam's, you know, had a tough go, but I think this he could wrap his head around the time frame of 6 weeks versus six months to 9 months, you know, one of those types of deals.
Yes.
So
100%.
A little bump in the road.
Little bump in the road. And I guess, you know, with Hazy, it's you know, he's obviously a big part of their team. That's no secret, but I guess if you're going to have something wrong, let's get it out of the way, get it fixed.
Yeah.
And that way you're not going through the whole season. You know, you're basically going to miss camp. It's basically what you're going to do. And he's a good enough player, a veteran. And, who knows, he may come back earlier than he's supposed to, but we'll see, but we wish him all luck, obviously, and, get well soon. They'll be missed, but they'll be back. So
they'll be back. All right, Nass, let's jump into episode 41 with our boy Jody Shelley.
Number 45, Jody Shelley. Let's do it, baby.
Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
I'm Derek Settlemyer, and this week we're very lucky and fortunate and happy to to have one of our main man, number 45, Jody Shelley. What's up, Shells?
How you doing, guys? Great to see you. Nice to see you guys are doing well with this podcast, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, it's our pleasure. We appreciate you taking your time out of your busy day to do it, man.
It's not too busy. I got time for you guys anytime, you know?
It's awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate that. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm in just a suburb of Columbus, Ohio. My wife is from this area. I played here for my first 7 years of my career, so now I'm back in the organization. My son and my daughter are involved in youth sports and school, and I'm a parent. It's been a nice off season, but as you guys know, training camp starting here this week. So just buzzing, getting back, trying to get organized. You guys understand what it's like. You think you got so much time until camp starts and then bang, everything comes at once. So I'm in that right now. So just trying to get organized, get ready for the 14th when the Blue Jackets open. I'm a broadcaster for the team. So I'm the in-game analyst with Jeff Rimmer. So the last couple of years we haven't traveled. Our away games, we've gone to Cincinnati and done the games at a studio, the Fox studio there. But now we're getting back on the road. So, you know, everyone enjoys the road. There's some great perks, but it's with the 12 and 11-year-old son and daughter, it's going to be tough to leave and get back on the road. But I'll get geared up for it, I'm sure.
Old dog's 12.
Owen's 12. Yeah, that's right.
The old dog, man.
That was 11 years ago.
Yeah. I know, man. That's crazy. Good for him, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I got a question right off the hop about you guys in Columbus. A lot of moves, some at the deadline, some obviously this summer. Big one being Atkinson for Jakey. Do you think maybe it's a rebuild there? Or I don't know enough. I can't act like I know enough about the team like you do. But you lost Jones as well. Is that their mentality right now, or what do you think? You know, you're the insider, you're the guy.
Well, I don't know if I'm an insider, but I'll tell you what I think. You know, right away when those things happen, so like if you go back to training camp last year, Pierre-Luc Dubois signs a contract, but immediately you hear that he wants out Columbus. So that thing gets turned up and churned up pretty good. He gets sent to Winnipeg, and you know, back comes Patrick Laine, really a star shooter, a 23-year-old guy. He had 41 goals his first year in the National Hockey League. And he doesn't really settle in and find his game all season long. Almost daily, you were waiting for more from him. Then you'd see guys at the deadline like Foligno, who's been here forever as the captain. David Savard is one of those guys that you guys know, and Riley for sure. Those guys that do things, the dirty work that as a defenseman – takes up a lot of space, eats a lot of minutes, and just is hard to play against. Well, David Savard gets traded to Tampa and wins the Stanley Cup. Then in the offseason, you're right, in draft day, Seth Jones signs that contract after he gets traded, and the Blue Jackets pick up Boquist and a first-round pick. The first-round pick, they get Sillinger, who played for the Flyers. You probably had him there, Nasty. And then his son, I mean. And then Cam Atkinson comes this way, or goes that way, and Jake Voracek comes this way. And Atkinson, a fan favorite, guy who's got a great business here in Columbus with youth hockey. He's got a little rink that he's developed a lot of kids out of. People thought he'd be a lifer, but it screams rebuild, right? All those moves, you're looking at 8 or 9 really solid guys that were brought in here. I didn't even mention Josh Anderson. Yeah. But when you look at the pieces they have, they're way ahead of a rebuild. They Domi, Line A, and then you pick up Corrali. You've got some good pieces in Zach Werenski, who just signed a long-term deal. Goalie Elvis just signed a long-term deal. So they've got good goaltending. They've got a superstar in defense who wants to be the number one. And with Jones, I don't think he was. But I was with you. I was in the same boat when I saw Jones got leave. I was really kind of like, okay, this is going to be a few years away. But this team has always done really well as the underdog, and it's been that way. I mean, Torts isn't here anymore, but he loved that role of no one giving them any respect. And I feel like, and I've just talked to some of the players. You got Voracek, who's, as you guys know, he's a no-nonsense guy on the ice. To me, he's a guy who's Very competitive and demands so much of himself and his teammates. Likes to have a good time off the ice, which I think is so valuable. But he's also a guy who understands his role in the locker room. And, you know, he's not here for a rebuild. He's here to help lead and help this new brand of Blue Jackets come through. So they picked up good draft picks, but they've got awesome veterans. Jack Roslovic, he's a rising star. And then Boone Jenner is one of the guys. I mean, if you guys don't know him, but he's one of the guys you would just stay in the locker room and hang out with. He includes everyone and everything he does. So a lot of good pieces. So that's a long-winded answer to tell you that I wouldn't call it a rebuild. They're calling it a bit of a reset, so a retool on the fly. And I think they're really excited about, you know, there's not a lot of expectations, but the players want to win. And you know, guys like Gus Nyquist, who was injured last year, good players to have around.
Well, yeah, that's a good answer. that's a really good answer. Honestly,
really good insight. I'm interested to see how it works out as well, because they like you mentioned, they did add some pretty interesting pieces, and I'm probably most interested in seeing how Jake responds. You know, having a little more spirit injected back into him and going back to an organization he was drafted into, and you know, having a fresher start. I think he was. His time was up in Philly. He just needed to go somewhere else. So, you know, again, he's great in the locker room. You know, it's always about that chemistry off the ice as well as on the ice. But I think they have those pieces that right out of the gate, it's not a total rebuild. I like the word reset. I've never really heard it described like that. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is, right?
Yeah, and it was their word early last year. And you know, you kind of think, yeah, right. You know, you're trying to say reset. But is it really a reset? And you know, they were proactive. They weren't a team that sat and looked at everybody walk out the door. They were kind of like, you know what? We're going forward. Zach Rentz, you want to be here for the next 7 years? We're going to give you a nice big contract, and you're the centerpiece of what we're doing. Elvis Merzlikins, you want to be here? Let's do it. So it's kind of, you know, changing the dialogue here, and I think that that's creating more excitement.
That's awesome. That's
awesome, yeah. Good position to be in. Like I said, no expectations, and you know, to me, they'll probably overachieve based on what you're describing.
I think they will.
Yeah, but it must be nice for you. I mean, you've been there for a while. I know you've been, you know, maybe different roles within the Columbus Blue Jackets broadcasting world. But it's obviously great for you to be back, say home, and call that home for you, since you, you spent a good chunk of your career there and established yourself as arguably one of the toughest dudes to ever play the game. I love to see what you do, because you're very well spoken. You know the game, obviously, very well. So that it seems to be right in your wheelhouse of you know, what you do best is communicate and, you know, and present your knowledge to the people.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that compliment. You know, a lot like you, I mean, you know, I'm not from Columbus. I know you're not from Philadelphia. And you know, it kind of speaks to you, you know, and I think early in your career, if you can identify with a place like we did, you know, it means a lot. And it's for us, it's a great place to raise a family. I know it's for you too. And, you know, I do like to talk. So broadcasting is a good area for me. When I retired from Philly, I got to Columbus, and John Davidson, Hall of Fame broadcaster, he was the president here of the Blue Jackets at the time. He since has gone to New York, and now he's back. Which is great for the organization. But I went in like every other guy, every other player that retires. I wanted to be in hockey operations. I wanted to help with the on the ice. I know so much, you know, we have all the answers from the back of the bus. You know, he looks at me, he says, I got nothing for you but broadcasting. I'm like, no way. Like, I'm not, you know, it doesn't make any sense. I don't want to put myself out there. You know, I don't want people to tear me apart on Twitter. No, I just can't do it. So he told me to leave for a couple of weeks, come back and think about it. And he told me the lifestyle. He said, just try it for a year. You'll be amazed. So I did do radio. I've done a lot of digital with the team. And of course, my main thing is on TV as the color analyst. So it's been a dream job. I tell everyone, Riley, Nasty, it's like being a healthy scratch in the National Hockey League. It's if you have no curfew and you don't have to worry about your body weight whatsoever. So
yeah, right. That's like a fucking dream job.
It is. You get to talk about it. You do a hell of a job.
Yeah, you look good on the bench there.
And even I see it sometimes. I don't know if you're doing it again this year, but on the NHL Network, man, I always like seeing you on there. Hell of a job, man. Hell of a job.
I appreciate it. Yeah, the people – I work with a lot of good people. And, you know, when you find your way in this business, you find a lot of people want to help. And that's been a nice advantage.
Jeff Rimmer, I remember the last time I was at Columbus, I was able to talk to him, and he actually grabbed me and said, "Hey, I know your old man really well, Sudsy." And I was like, "Yes, sir, I know who you are." I said, I'm older than I look. I said, "I've been listening to you back from the home team sports days when you're in Washington." He goes, "Oh my God." I love that voice of his too when he's calling a game. I think I've always heard it my whole life. But
yeah, he's a good veteran. He knows how to call a game. And I tell you what, he loves it. I mean, so, you know when you're around someone who loves what they do?
Yeah.
Rimmer absolutely loves it. He bounces off the walls until the puck is dropped, and then he just settles right into his call. It's fun to watch.
That's awesome.
Right on. I wanted to talk to you. I mean, we usually work backwards, but you're talking about Columbus and where you started in the whole bit, and maybe talk about, you know, finding your way to that organization, because I know it's somewhat of an interesting road. From what I know, you played in the Quebec Major Junior League in Halifax, and I believe you went to Canadian University before you turned pro. Was that a decision that you made thinking you weren't going to go pro, or you didn't really know what you wanted to do? How did that all play out?
That was a strange, I mean, it just kind of, it worked out for me, because, you know, you play in the CHL, and I was in the Quebec League, and you get a year paid of Canadian college for every year you play. So my last year, my overage year, I tore my ACL. There was no pro offers on the table. There was one tryout with Calgary. They were kind of interested for me to go to the American League. So now it's April. I tear my ACL. So that summer I rehab and I enroll at Dalhousie University in the business program there. So, I mean, I could tell you funny story after funny story. I mean, I actually took out a $5,000 credit line and used it as my signing bonus and spent it. I think I spent it in 4 days down at the bars and in Halifax. And I was big wheeling it, because what was happening, Riley, was the guys that I fought in junior were playing in the National Hockey League. Peter Worrell, Gordy Dwyer, these guys were, I was in college rehabbing and not allowed to fight. And these guys were, you know, in the National Hockey League. And then I remember calling my mom and I said, "Mom," and she's a school teacher, former school teacher. And I said, "Mom, I'm going to leave college and I'm going to try a pro." And once you sign a pro contract, which to me was only a tryout with the St. John of the Flames organization, your whole scholarship is gone. All my 3 years were gone out the window. And she was crying, "No, don't do it. Don't do it, Jody." And I said, "I have to know if I can play one game like these guys are doing." So, you know, fast forward a year and a half later, I'm in the East Coast Hockey League in Johnstown thinking, what have I done? What have I done? I'm in Jingletown, a great city, but, you know, it was a long way from the National Hockey League. And, you know, eventually, again, expansion was good to me because it meant another American Hockey League team. You know, you were settled in the Phantoms. They're one of the toughest organizations ever. And, I got to go to Syracuse and be a part of that and then work my way up to the National Hockey League in Columbus.
Shells, I remember, I was telling Riley, I remember the first time, I don't think we ever, the Phantoms, we did play St. John Flames, but I don't think I ever saw you there. But I remember, I think it was 2000, 2001, we played Syracuse a few times. And I remember seeing you, and I told Riley, I was like, I remember seeing this guy going, "Oh my God, who is going to have to talk to this guy?" I was like, guys are probably like, "Fuck. Oh yeah.
Yeah. A little tight. I broke tonight. My arm.
Rodney Dangerfield. I broke my arm." You know, but hey. I couldn't believe how long and big you were. And I'm like, this guy's going to string someone out and just absolutely go bananas on him. Like, what a big man. But
if you only knew, I mean, we were all so nervous when we had to get into it, but the worst part, I remember my pro career vividly going it was training camp, American Hockey League, and we went in to play the Phantoms. And I remember the brass was standing up top watching. And I remember looking at the roster of guys I must have been five deep: Fedorik, Cote, Bolaris, McLaren, and I swear those guys were fighting each other to fight me. And I was like, "Oh, this is going to be a long night," because everyone just wanted to go and show what they could do. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, those games must have taken 5 hours there in Philly. It was amazing, the number of fights.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you, Sheldon. I've asked a lot of guys, but like, as tough as you were, like, there's always got to be, I wouldn't know, because I am not a tough man. But yes, you are what nasty. You and Riley did. Wait, oh, yeah. So dumb. What you and Riles did, you know, for your teammates, so important. But how hard was it for you napping on a game day? Like we talked to Chief about it. Chief actually said to us, oh, yeah, try taking a nap knowing you're going to fight Probert. And then Koester comes over and says, I'm next. He's like, not a chance. I had a wake of sleep. But I just wondered how you handled that part of the game, you know, knowing maybe, you know, you're going to be mixing it up.
Well, I dealt with it. I napped. I had no problem napping. I slept like a baby and I would go 3 hours hard and I was out. And, it was the day before that I would kind of go through my process of kind of like dealing with it. I would feel myself getting really anxious. And then I would, you know, I had this mindset of, I don't really care. Like, I don't care if I win or lose the fight. That's why I don't think I could have been like the champ, like George the Rock, you know what I mean? As we call it, whoever it was, you know, to lose a fight would, you know, it would be devastating for him. And I would, you know, when I would fight guys like Bugard, God rest his soul. I mean, yeah. He's bigger, you know, he's stronger. And that's probably the mentality Riley had too, because, you know, Riley wasn't the biggest guy, but boy, when you fought him, you knew you were in one. You know what I mean? And he liked the long fights, which I hated, and he knew that, I think, because he always tried to go longer. But anyways, you know, I dealt with it the night before, and you know, I'd hang out with the teammates. It was always in the back of your mind, you know, because you got to play the system. You know, you mess up on the system on a breakout, you're on the bench the rest of the game. You don't know when the other guy wants to fight, so you got that going through your head. You're on a shift, and you know he's on the ice, and you're kind of like, okay, is he coming near me? No. Okay, this is fun. I'll play hockey this shift. And then you got to, you know, try to process where the game is at. Is it smart to fight? Is it about me? Is it about the team? So a lot to digest. But by the time game time got there or that afternoon, I was totally relaxed. It was weird for me because I credited to that mindset of who cares, you know, whatever happens, happens. And that helped me.
Yeah. That's a lot like myself, honestly. I slept like a baby, like during the pregame nap. But the night before, it was when I was like going through the ringer. I was like, how is this going to play out? And you know, think right. about it and this and that. And but I had the kind of the same attitude. It was like, you know, like when I see you and I watch you kind of when I was still in juniors and seeing you move up. Like you were just like this gamer, this warrior, this fearless warrior. And that was kind of like how I approached it. Like I didn't give a shit if I got my ass beat. I just wanted to show up, you know, and I just wanted to like, you know, and at least put on a show and like, you know what I mean? And get some energy out of it. So I didn't necessarily really care how it played out, but it was just kind of, going through the motions of how it was going to be engaged in. But I think of you, like, you mean, as far as the guys that I fought throughout my career and the guys that I just followed and observed, like you were probably arguably like the biggest gamer there was. I think when you retired, you had, you know, at the time you had like 173 fighting majors or something like that in that time. Yeah. Like there was no other player that outfought you. But you were always gamer. You were never one of those guys that would just like, you know, not tonight. You know, it's like not tonight. No. You know, maybe there was those nights, but like you never seemed like you were that guy to fight Rob Probert three times in one night. Yeah. And whatever year that was, wow. You know, I think maybe George the Rock too. I think you might have fought him three times or maybe twice, but you know, like there was no off nights for you, which I respect because it's easy to play that card. And I saw so many guys do that as they got yeah. older.
Well, you know, I had to, in the opposite words of Mike Rupp, I had to stay relevant. You know what I mean? You have to stay. Yeah. You have to stay busy. And I would go three games sometimes without a fight. And then I'd be like, well, you know what I mean? I got to keep doing what I'm doing. And for me, we were losing in Columbus a lot. I understood the value of, you know, a Saturday night being down 2-0 at home. You know, you want to get everyone going. You want to get fired up. It was just kind of an uneasy feeling when I didn't fight. And now that I see how fighting has evolved, you know, if I had the option of not fighting, and I'm sure you would have too, not fighting and evolving into a third liner or a second liner, I would have said, see you to fighting. You know what I mean? I look at guys like Wayne Simmons and Tom Wilson, and, you know, they got themselves out of that kind of that mold and really took their game to that level. And where we, you know, we had to keep fighting each other to make sure that, you know, this was still happening. It was kind of like the Broad Street Bullies. When they got tough, everyone had to respond and get tough. When we had tough guys on teams, if you sat on the bench and I sat on the bench and we just tried to play hockey, well, we're just kind of like, well, you know, after we do that against each other for 10 games, we're like, well, we'll just put someone else in here to do this. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I kind of felt like we had to stay on top of it. And that's really what helped our existence a little longer. That's the way I see how it's evolved a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we were still playing in that era where teams carried, you know, two or three guys. Now it's like, you know, like if a team carries a guy, he wouldn't be like, you know, like the super heavyweight almost. Maybe there's a couple guys floating around like that. But yeah, it's evolved so much. I would have loved to have, you know, John Stevens or Hitch or Lavi be like, just go play tonight, you know, just go and play, you know, work the system.
You know? That wasn't in your mindset, bro.
Not that they were telling me to fight, but it was just like, it was just the way I, you know, approached the game. I just assumed I had to fight. And if I had someone in my ear saying, you know, maybe actually focus on being a hockey player, maybe I might have, you know, transitioned my thinking a little bit. But that's nor here nor there. I mean, we were still in that era of absolute chaos. There was, especially in the minor leagues moving up, it was chaos, man. There was no nights off, nowhere to hide.
And it, still, if the coach would have even told you that, you would have been like, okay, and you would have been in a fight your first shift. I mean, that's just the mentality.
Chief told me a story. He told me this way back when we first got you. He says he was like happy, like picking you up. Obviously you signed with the Flyers, and he goes, this fucker skates up to me. He goes, I'm playing in Calgary. You know, at the time, I think he said Calgary, he was still in Calgary. And he says, Shells lines up and goes, you still fight, old man? Chief's like, I'm trying not to laugh because I'm like, it's pretty fucking lying. He's like, yep. He goes, I think I fought Shells. Like, fucking every time we played, he
came.
Leave me the fuck alone. He said, I'm done, man. I didn't want to fight anymore.
Well, he used to play for Dave King, who was my coach my first year. And Kinger loved Chief. He just always told me great stories about how he, you know, had good hands, and he was a good stand-up tough guy, and he worked at his game. So every time I saw him, I felt like I had to fight him. Boy, I tell you what, he didn't hold back either. We had some doozies. Yeah. It was just punch after punch after punch. What a great guy.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome, man.
Funny.
He would always – I probably said this before too, but it was funny when you were there – he was all wound up in the morning. We used to get there early, go for a run. So to start the morning off, we'd always jump in the hot tub to loosen up, and then we'd go for a run. And he wouldn't say anything for a couple minutes, you know, just besides, yeah, you know, what's up? And then we get in the hot tub, kind of stretching. And he says, and this is Chief. People that don't know him don't get it, but you both know him so well. He goes, do you understand? I'm the toughest fucking guy in this building. And I'm like sitting in the hot tub, and I'm like, yeah, I know, buddy. Like, it's just me and you right now for one, you know? And he goes, oh, you can go tell the old guy upstairs too. Talk about Homer, right? He goes, you can go tell him too. And he goes, matter of fact, you can tell 45 when he gets here.
Oh, nice.
And I said, oh yeah. You want me to tell him? You want to talk to him on the ice? He goes, no, not today. Don't do it today. You know, like,
it's funny.
Yeah, he was just, God, he used to laugh at me. He's like, tell you don't understand how tough I am. I'm like, yeah, I get it. You know, and he still does it, but
it's great. What a great guy. I'm glad he was around when I was there as an assistant coach. Yeah. You know, just the way he played the game, what did he play? Over 1,100 games? He played a lot of hockey.
Oh, yeah.
He played 18 and you know, he played. And everyone he played with, I mean, they just love him because he's no nonsense. He's a fun guy to be around, and he's so dry. His humor is so dry. So yeah, he was an asset there for the Flyers.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Shells, I got to ask you, you know, leading up to you signing with the Flyers 2009, 2010, I think it was your last two games of the season that year. You scored back two games in a row, I think, Atlanta. Yeah. Maybe that last game against the Flyers even, I think you scored. Yeah. But you were out there. You were out there the last like 2-3 minutes of the game. And that was like, you know, for the Flyers, you know, to make the playoffs. and mm-hmm. and
it, well, and them,
and you guys, and yeah, exactly, yeah.
Either, either so, one, it was going to be either one.
It was either one, yeah, and it was Torts, right? Torts is the coach.
Yeah, Torts is the coach. Yeah.
I mean, it's talk about him and the mentality there. I mean, like normally a guy, you know, say our role probably wouldn't be out there the last 3 minutes of the game when your whole season is dependent on it. But you know, you do certain things that the coach, you know, sees as like, you know, consistent things within the system and knows what you're going to get. To talk about that, and then you know how it, you know, eventually you signed with the Flyers and how that carried over into that season.
He had the hot stick, man.
Yeah, the hot stick.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Hey, it was hot.
We've all had the hot stick.
I'm not sure. I'm still waiting on it. Yeah. Toby.
Now you got it. The Toby.
Yeah, I got it now.
So it's it was an interesting time in my career because I was in San Jose, one of the best teams I've been on, probably the best team I'd been on. You know, we were supposed to win the Stanley Cup. The 2 years I was there, we were loaded. And you know, the next year, that second year I was there, it's the Olympic year in 2010. And, you know, there's two trade deadlines, one before the Olympic break, one after. So the one before, I know I'm going to get traded. So I'm in San Jose for 2 weeks. I'm with the team. I'm still around. I'm playing. And I know I'm going to get traded. So, you know, New York steps up and they make this trade for me before the deadline. So now I go from San Jose to New York City with my wife who's pregnant and my 1-year-old son. And you know, we're now in Manhattan. And I thought my career was going to be over. So I had this mentality when I got to New York that I was going to be there for the next 10 weeks and I was going to enjoy every single second. Every second I was there, I would, you know, I would walk to Madison Square Garden on game day with my headphones in, and I would just marvel at the city. And I'd get there, and the guy at the rope would be like, "Come on in, Mr. Shelley," and I'd be like, "This is the coolest thing ever. This is Madison Square Garden." Everything I did, you know, we had great personalities there. Guys like Sean Avery, Marion Gabrick, Chris Drury, Ryan Callahan, John Tortorella was the coach, and I, you know, Glenn Sather was around. Mark Messier was there for lunch. You know, I sat down at an empty table with Messier one day for lunch and chatted with him for 45 minutes. And it was like, you know, wow. I took advantage of my opportunities. Torts would be in the weight room. Everyone would be, you know, no one would want to go in there. I'd stroll right in and say, "Hey, Torts, how you doing?" Do my stuff and get out of there. Not to like suck up or anything, just to like, I had this kind of, you hear about it where you're kind of in the zone or free thinking mentality. I had it and I enjoyed it and I brought it to the games and I loved having the Ranger blue on. And then when I think about that mindset, I think back, I'm like, you know, how do you bottle that up? It's really where I was in my life. I was a little bit older. I thought I was done and I was just going to enjoy it, like inside the ropes being done. So Torts, we're in game 81 and we're at home against the Flyers and it's a home and home. So it's, you know, if we win, then game 82 is for something. So we win, and I score in that game. I almost scored two. Bush gave me a puck out of the corner. He was in the corner. I was in front with an empty net. He dove across and made the save. I was like, oh, boy, that's good. I hope that's not the pivotal save in this game that I'm going to be the donkey, you know, not putting it in the empty net. I already had one. But after the game, I knew I was going to score in game 82. I was like, and Torts played me 14 minutes that game. They're, you know, he's so situational. Guys aren't going, or he doesn't see them going. He just throws guys out there. And I was playing against Mike Richards and, you know, Jeff Carter, and I was getting under their skin. And it was just kind of like, I don't know. I was just playing hockey. And I wish every player like us, Riley, could experience it because it was magical. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, for the Rangers, we go home after the loss in a shootout. We had Lundqvist. You know, he practices shootouts in warm-up.
Yeah.
We talked about
that.
We got Giroux and Briere, and we got Christensen and Ole Jokinen and old Bushy with that little shuffle and took you guys right to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Blackhawks. It was a heck of a year. And, you know, Holmgren and my agent had talked, and Philly was interested, and I was thrilled because that was – a team I really liked growing up. And it was just, that's how I got to Philly. And that's how it ended that season. And it was just something, one of those mindset things. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. That's interesting insight. It's called, I guess, flow state, right? You were just like,
exactly.
You know, being in the present moment, enjoying it, which is probably a life lesson for everybody. You should be living like that all the time.
It's hard to get there. You know, it's hard to get there. Yeah, but if you are, but if things do align and you're there and you recognize it and you really don't care, it's not that I didn't care, but I didn't care about all the outside noise. I cared right. about enjoying it and appreciating it. And that really made me, made things click.
Yeah. That's the mindset.
I was going to say, if you could just do that on a daily basis with life, it would be nice.
Oh, yeah.
I have a hard problem doing that. Doing yeah. that fucking no. always worried, but
for sure.
That's pretty cool. Shells. I don't think we ever talked about that. That's a great way of going about it. Right. Like,
yeah. And oh, for sure.
You sit out 45 minutes with Moose. Messier. Yeah. Fuck, that'd be sick.
Yeah. It was a special conversation. It was really, you know, again, it was an opportunity where I could have just sat at the other table and quietly ate my food and left. But I decided, you know what?
Take it back.
If the opportunity is there, just do what you can. And yeah. that's how that came out.
You know what? You know what's funny about this story too is that so my year in meetings that year, I didn't play a whole lot under Lavi. When Lavi came in, my role pretty much it was non-existent.
You warmed up every game.
I warmed up every game. Well, yeah, let the game warm up.
Nice. Yeah. Right. I remember that.
Yeah,
like, my year in meetings. Is he going to be in tonight?
No, just getting a little extra work in.
Is Cote going to be in?
Hey, Shells, when you were on the other side of it, if you would have seen the 7 black coffees he drank and everything yeah. else, you
in my mind, I thought I was in, but
gotta be ready.
Pulled me out, put me on the bike. But my year in meeting was about Jody Shelley, and like my whole year in meeting was like,
oh really?
Did you watch Jody play these last two games? This is how you need to play. And I'm thinking in my head, I was like, well, first of all, I never had 14 minutes in the NHL my whole career here. It turns out I landed up retiring, but my whole meeting, it was funny, you know, cause it's like, this is how you have to play. Oh, I landed up retiring.
Telling me that.
Yeah. And then like, I think maybe a couple office. Weeks later you yeah. signed there. I was like, Jesus. I'm like, this is all by design. This is like, they wanted me out so bad.
Riley actually came down. I remember like him coming to my office. He goes, well, I learned I need to be more like Jody Shelley. Cause that's basically what he told me.
So you hated me. You're like, oh, that guy, what the heck? He's playing 14 minutes.
Wow, you're out there like 2 minutes to go in a 2-2 tie there, and you're out there. I was like, geez, I'm like, how do I get that opportunity? It was ironic, you know. You tell the story, and you know, and then you land up signing there, obviously, because Lavi was a big fan of yours, and
right on.
He really was.
Yeah, for sure. So interesting. How that worked I got a
question, Shelves, about coaches. First of all, like who's like, maybe you don't have to say your favorite coach, but who do you feel like you maybe, I don't know, learned the most, who you enjoyed the most out of your career? Because you had some pretty good coaches that you played for.
Yeah, you know, I'd say I learned the most from Dave King. He was here just a short time. I had him and Hitch. I was very well coached. And, you know, Hitch, you know, towards the end, he was not the biggest fan of mine, which I was okay with. But I was amazed at his game preparation. I was amazed that he put 8 things on the board. And if you did what he did, what he said, you'd have success. But my favorite and the one I enjoyed the most is obviously John Tortorella. I mean, I know he's not for everyone, but the way that, you know, he's not a lot of rules and he's not a lot of, you know, clamping down. But when you're there, work hard and get out of there. And I found him refreshing, really did. You know, for a guy like you, Riley, you would have loved him.
Yeah.
You would have loved him and what he did. I enjoyed Laviolette. You know, he took the team all the way to the finals the year before, and his preparation, his passion, the guys were talking about his motivational speeches, his pregame speeches before I got there. Those were cool. You know, those were good. I enjoyed him. And I had Todd McClellan in San Jose, and you know, he had a great team. So he had spent a lot of time trying to manage guys and try to get the most out of superstars who were having success. We were winning every game, but you know, how do you still coach? So it was fun to watch him and try to be around that and be a part of the leadership too. So it's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but my number one would be Torts.
That's awesome. I've been fortunate enough to work with Torts with USA Hockey.
Yeah.
And I mean, what a human being. Like just a great, great guy, man. Yeah. We were at the World Cup. I was with him at the Olympics in 2010. And he was an assistant to Ron Wilson. But in 2016 at the World Cup, obviously it did not go well for US. We didn't win a game. But I'll tell you what, it killed him inside. Yeah. But every day he made sure he came by and said, "Hey, Nash, you guys need anything? Have a good night." You know, like, and yeah, for a coach in that, you know, situation, you know, all the lights are on you, all the cameras. I mean, just a good man. We said it before, you know, Scott Hartnell talked about him and I can't really say anything. Well, I know I can't say anything bad about the man. He's an incredible human.
He takes care of the trainers. I really liked him.
There's a lot of real positive things said about Torts. I think it's the media that really picks him apart and shows like this. Well, I mean, the emotional side of Torts, right? I mean, that's all they're picking out. And they make it seem like it's a negative thing, you know, but right. I hear great things about him all the time. So
Benny Caballé told me when he left there, well, his last couple of years, they had fuck you fights every day. Like, he's got it. Vinny in the office. Vinny wasn't happy, you know, with whatever. Torts wasn't happy. And they were literally like, fuck you, no, fuck you. And he'd walk out and he's in Philly and he goes, he's one of my best friends. He's like, I talk to him all the time.
That's great.
You know, like, so it's, you know, like Shell said, that's the part I learned about him. Obviously not being a player, just being a pigeon equipment guy, but listening to him. And all he wants is you to work.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he wants you to work. And
pretty simple concept, that, right?
But I mean,
not a lot to ask, right?
Yeah, not a lot to ask. And you got to have, come on, Shells, you got to have a hitch story, something good, at least something. We had Steve Mason last week. Yeah,
did you?
Yeah, he had a couple good ones, and yeah, I just wondered if you had. I had a couple, and I only had it for 9 to 10 games with Riley, and there was a couple of good ones. But I just wondered if you had anything great. Like, I love Hitch.
Yeah,
he was good to me. He was good to me.
Well, he was great to me too, and we just always, you know, Hitch. I remember hearing him talk to our strength coach Barry Brennan, you know, and Hitch was a big golfer. So he would ask Barry, Barry, how many calories do you burn after you hit 1,000 golf balls? And Barry's like, what? He's like, oh yeah, it's gotta be a good workout. You know, trying to say that was an extreme workout. And Barry would say, I don't know, Hitch, probably 200 or 300 calories. No way. And he would sit there and argue with the strength coach that he burned more calories hitting 1,000 golf balls than doing 45 minutes on the elliptical. So,
oh man,
I liked him. Right. He was, that sounds about right. His preparation was second to none. The way he talks hockey, the way he understands hockey, he's a good one.
Yeah. I played golf with him a couple of times. And the first time I played with him, it was Paul Holmgren and Hitch and myself. So Hitch is riding with me. So he hits his tee shot, and I'd heard he's a good golfer. Mm-hmm. He hits his tee shot so far left and into the bush. I mean, there's no way. It was a links course. You're never finding the ball, right? So I pulled the cart over to the area it was in, mm-hmm. and I said, Coach, I'll help you out here, Hitch. You know, he goes, nope, young Derek, just stay right there. I'll find it. He goes about a foot into it, and he goes, oh, got it. He hit Chelsea, hit the ball 40 yards. So I'm like, okay. So he hits his next day. He's on the left side of the first hole. He hits the next shot totally under the bush on the right side. I said, hey, Hitch, you want me to help you look? Like, you sort of drop one. No. I got, oh, here it is. Got it. You know, and I'm like, there's no fucking way, right? So then he hits a shot. He's a little short, hits it over the green. Back onto the green, three putts, goes, put me down for a bogey. Homer goes, are you out of your fucking mind? He goes, you hit the ball about 10 times, not to mention the 10 you lost, you know, like, but I will say this, he damn near parred every hole after that.
Did he?
But I laughed because I'd be like, hey, let me give you a hand, Hitch. No, young Derek, stay right there. I got it.
Hope you guys weren't playing for money.
No. Well, that's what Homer said. Thank God it's for money, Hitch, because you definitely don't know how to keep score. But, yeah, he was funny. He was good. He was good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, suspect swing, but he somehow gets it done, eh, Nast?
Yeah,
man, I'm telling you, he damn near parred every hole after that. I'm not kidding.
That impresses me.
I
can't find a par anywhere out there.
I played yesterday and I only had a couple. Man, I was terrible. But anyway, Shells, I got another question for you. This may be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So, talking about back in the day when you were playing, not that it was that long ago, and you guys were saying, you know, there were a couple guys on each team, and not that you knew you were going to have to per se, but you knew if Riley skated up and goes, hey, you want to go, you were probably not going to say no.
Right.
But was there a time that you could think of where you were like fucking mad that you were like, I'm going to fight this guy. And I want to, you know, so any time where you got yourself to that point where you're just so mad about something.
Not in the NHL. I was in Portland in camp. And Barry Trotz was a coach. And they had this guy with Hampton Roads named Ron Magic. And he, right off the face-off, right outside the blue line, he jumped me. And I wasn't ready. He jumped me. And, you know, he started screaming after the fight. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I told the ref, I said, don't drop the puck yet. I went to the box. I got all my stuff back on. They didn't kick us out because I was like, no, we're doing this again. Got all my stuff on and I was livid. So they waited for me to get all dressed again because he had ripped all my stuff off. I go back over and I whack him across the ankles and he's waiting for me. And I go, now we're going. So then we went and I was so mad. There was no way that was going to go the other way. But that's one of those training camps from 1998. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, they had a lot of guys and everyone was trying to show them, measure themselves. And I was like, no. And, you know, I don't know why I did that, but looking back, it was because I was so mad. But in the NHL, I never really, you know, it was such a, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Just take care of business and move on. Be thankful you didn't, you know, get knocked out. You know, glad the other guy's okay and just play hockey. So I think that I don't think I ever really was mad. It was just weird. But
a couple guys have actually said that. So I just wondered.
Yeah.
But the magic man had it coming to him.
Well, he was a tough dude. He was a big, strong guy, but I was just, he got me the first one, but I wasn't ready, but I made sure we were going to fight fair, you know?
You got to.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Cause I don't remember ever really fighting mad either. And then a couple of times I actually got mad and wanted to fight. I never really was able to get into, well, at least get the guy that I wanted. One was Sean Avery at one point, a couple other guys, Coletta, and a couple of guys that I never ended up fighting. But, you know, most of the time it's like, you know, like you think about like martial artists and like the mindset of a fighter, right? I mean, usually you don't want to be angry, right? It's like, cause then you're emotionally fighting. That's when you make mistakes or you do something you typically wouldn't. But you know, in your case against that guy, it was probably the right, maybe just the in the moment right thing to do, but you don't want to make a habit of that, especially you're fighting 30, 35 times a year to be fighting angry.
Right. No, because you know, there's hockey too. So like, you know, we didn't just show up to fight. We had to like manage a shift and you know, there was a lot more to it. So I don't think you had time to be overly mad.
Right. It's funny you describe the part of the role as managing a shift where, you know, you grow up playing hockey. It's like, you know, the goal is to carry the puck and make plays and score.
Right.
Goals. Now you're at the pro level and your job is to just manage the shift, right? Just
don't get make sure you get it deep. Make sure you get it deep.
Talk about the psychology behind that. Just don't get score on, get it deep and try and get a bang. And then, just to survive for the next shift. Pretty interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, Shells, you probably don't remember this, but I was in a training camp with you in Columbus 2003. I don't know if you remember this at all.
We were,
this is my second year going to my second year pro. The second year I kind of adopted the tough guy role, right? So I was doing everything the wrong way, you know, but partying, steroids, the whole bit. Anyways, I come into Columbus Blue Jackets training camp, all juiced up, just bigger than I ever should have been and not very functional. But I remember it was you and Sean Pronger in the change room and you made some like small talk with me and whatever. And then Sean Pronger makes a comment like, looking at me like, oh shit, like I want what Cote's on or something like that. And he kind of laughed, and it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of like, no, but not known, because it was just so obvious. But it was actually,
it was obvious.
It was really? Pretty obvious. Nate Kaiser was another guy that was there. And
Jay
Reynolds, I think like three times in that training camp there. I don't think we ever landed up playing against each other, but it was kind of like etched in my memory, because I just remember like you sitting there, and Sean Pronger is like totally calling me out on being on steroids. But it was a pretty funny moment, because I mean, I was just like trying to survive, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was young. I was, you know, 21 at the time, but yeah.
GM, I don't remember that.
GM?
No, I don't. We had like guys like Sean Legault. I was focused you know what I mean? There were some tough guys there that year. And then I remember, I don't remember that exactly, but
yeah.
I remember fighting Legault and Pusher, who's a veteran guy, and
yeah, Jamie, yeah,
a couple other guys. And for some reason I don't remember that. You were big though. I remember that. You were one big dude.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was. It was not right.
GM called you in.
Yeah, it was a couple days later. Yeah, he called in because I'd signed a contract with Syracuse, not with Columbus, but you know, it was Syracuse. But they called me in the office, and basically, well, they asked me directly to my face if I was on steroids, and I was like, no. No, I was taking a lot of supplements, lifting a lot of weights. You know, I'm a tough guy.
Creatine.
Yeah, a lot of creatine. But, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Moving like a battleship. But it was actually that training camp where it was an absolute wake up call. Like, if I was actually had a chance of playing in the NHL, I couldn't do it that way. Like, because I was in the Central Hockey League before, you know, the year before, which is like full of meatheads, full of juice, you know, juiced out guys. You know, I mean, you're fighting in Johnstown there, probably fought 40 times there. It was nonstop. So I didn't know, like, you know, being in junior hockey, I wasn't a fighter. Like, I'd maybe 20 fights in 4 years, right?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So I just kind of learned to take that role on once I turned pro. But I
thought
juice and, you know, acting all, you know, tough and all that stuff, like, you know, was the way, you know. But it really, you know, it landed up hurting me, and, you know, and I had to figure out how to be a little more functional and obviously not sacrifice my ability to skate and, you know, play the game too. So that was it. That was a wake-up call. It was like, and then you were kind of part of it with Sean calling me out, and then the general manager.
Right on.
Yeah. So,
it's impressive you turned it around like that, you know, because I imagine it'd be hard to change your mindset and your body type and still be motivated. So that's really impressive. I mean,
yeah. It was a lot of self-exploring, and just landed up lifting as much weights and just doing more functional stuff. You know what I mean? And I landed up, you know, when I got to the Phantoms, you know, basically hiring Slava, skating coach, and just trying to become more of a hockey player, right? Because I was so consumed by the role, as you know, right? You become consumed by it. I just didn't know how to like create boundaries around, you know, where do I stop being a tough guy and start being a hockey player? That was my challenge for me personally.
Right.
Interesting psychology, really. Right. I love and playing then, hockey.
Right. We all love playing. We're all hockey players, right? Yeah. But right, if you can find a role to get your foot in the door, I mean, that's really how we become what we did as guys that were mainly fighters. And that was our opportunity. That was our vehicle. So you took it to the max one way and figured out that, hey, this is too far one way, right? Yep. So then you meet it down the middle. I think we all went through that process in our own way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how it plays out and how guys, you know, it's not a normal role, right? I mean, and for some guys, they do it in junior hockey. They kind of learn about it when they're young, but you have to find yourself in it because it consumes you, right? I mean, that's why you see a lot of guys go dark with it, and because you're taking on a role bigger than yourself, and then you have to learn how to manage that, right? And the anxiety around it and the energy around it. It's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not. And then your expectations are one thing, but outside expectations are another. And that, I think that's where you get lost a little bit.
Yeah, that's the truth.
I saw Shelzy in Johnstown there, 36 games, 256 minutes. Yeah. boys on the other side must have been looking at the stat sheets going, holy.
Hey, we were the Chiefs, baby. Johnstown Chiefs. Right. We watched that video. We watched that movie every single road trip. And we were the Chiefs, so we knew what responsibility we had.
I have pictures. My dad played against the two Twins.
Oh, really?
Pictures. and they wore the glasses. I have
no way.
Pictures. I swear to God, I have pictures. My old man, well, you know, he's 5'4".
Yeah.
He's about 5'6", but he was actually thin then, but he's in net. The net looks like it does when Elvis is in it. My Elvis, not your Elvis. Sudsy's in net, and they're both in front of the net with the goggles on, no tape on them, but they got the glasses on playing. I'm like, holy shit. But yeah, I guess you guys were the Chiefs.
We were the Chiefs. The organ is still there at the War Memorial.
Wow.
Up in the rafters.
Amazing.
Quite the building there, man.
Yeah, it's quite. They've updated it since Hockeyville went in there. The NHL redid the building a little bit, did a nice job in Johnstown.
Yeah.
I think they have an NAHL team now there.
Oh, they do?
So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I still got the steep drop off, the 4-foot plunge on the ice. Yeah.
It's a step down lunge. Yeah. I was always hoping that the tough guy for the other team would sprain his ankle on the way up.
Right. Oh, man, that was dangerous. It was some serious liability there.
It would get you if you weren't ready for it.
Anybody that had skate guards on would have definitely blown a wheel.
No
joke. But you collected a few records in your time. All-time PIM record in Halifax, the Mooseheads, single-season record in Syracuse, single-game PIM record in San Jose. I mean,
yeah.
You did it right, man. You know, you owned the role. I mean,
I did.
You talk about embodying something. You embodied it. There's no question.
I maxed it out. You know, I rode that all, as far as I could. And that 41 penalty minute, someone asked me about the other day, because I'm coaching 12 and 13-year-old boys and girls. And it's like, you know, you try to ask them not to retaliate or stay out of the box. And then they're like, oh, really?
Yeah. 41 pims later.
They're Googling now.
Yeah, they know it. So I don't say much. But I think it was Steve Ott had fought Joe Thornton. And I was really upset. And you can't fight Joe Thornton. So next time Steve Ott was on the ice, I said to Todd McClellan, I said, I'm going. He goes, what? I said, I'm going. See ya. I jump over the boards. So I think I got 10 for getting on the ice, like going right at him, 10 for misconduct, 2 minutes for instigating, and a 5-minute major. And I think they threw in another 10. I think it was 41 penalty minutes, which, you know, there's only a 60-minute game. So that, I mean, it's, but I had to send the message, hey, don't fight Joe Thornton.
Yeah, right. It's a good night at the office. 41 PIMs, you'd be like feeling pretty good the next morning, walking around the ring.
Yeah, they must have just started giving me 10s when they were writing it down. I give him another 10. I throw another 10 on there. Make sure it doesn't come back.
That was like the old Dennis Bonvy, man. If he didn't collect, you know, a fighting major or 10 during the game, he'd make sure he'd go on the ice and tell the ref off the last 10 minutes of the game and get a 10-minute misconduct.
Really?
Add the PIMs. Oh, yeah. He was the master at it, Bones. Man.
Fucking Bones. I remember when he was in Scranton, well, and Hershey, and he played with the Phantoms. But every time, once I got to know him, he'd come down shells and he'd be like, fuck, I'm tired. Fuck. I'm like, tough night last night. Yeah, I just don't want to do it tonight. Hands are hurting. Fucking puck drops here.
The legend.
Oh, right.
I love that guy.
He had to be that guy with the most fights in the world during his career.
For sure, man.
There's no one in the world who fought as much as that.
No, he's 38 years old and still fighting 30 times a year. He would never say no. Oh, it was incredible. I got to ask about your incident with Sean Avery. I think it was in 2008. I'm not exactly sure what would happen, but were you guys squirting water or Gatorade at each other?
Oh, I saw that on YouTube. I don't even remember that. Remember that. But Sean, you know, when you play against Sean, he's always got an answer. I tried to steer clear of any arguments with him because he's just so quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't remember what it was. I probably said something smart and he started doing, I think he's, did I squirt at him or him squirt at me? I don't remember, but maybe I squirted at him.
Yeah.
Instead of using words, you know.
Yeah, yeah, right. Take it to the next level. Yeah, he's one of those guys that I remember trying to get at, especially early when I first cracked the lineup with the Flyers. I just could never quite get to him. You know, Colt Norr would step in the way, and I'd be like, "All right, you're gonna fight Orzy," and Avery's calling me a juice monkey, whatever the hell he's calling me, and all that stuff. But he's the one of the few guys that I wanted to get a hold of, but just never did.
Yeah. No, he was good in his role. He knew how to get it. He could rattle people. And playing with him with the Rangers, I mean, to hear some of the stuff he'd say to guys and you know, what he knew, I was like, whoa. And there was a couple times I just had to move away from him because he was
crossing the line.
Guys were just, I mean, he was embarrassing. They were getting rattled.
Yeah.
They were getting rattled. So. Yeah. Oh, man. He was good at it.
Yeah, hey, he definitely was.
I've got something to say.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Hey guys, I got something to say.
Yeah, right.
Oh man, that's crazy.
Right on.
Well, you got to, you did, you had a similar incident here with us when Briz did that on the outdoor game where he comes out of the shower and he did the same thing. Oh, I'd like to say something. he said talking about he's
gonna
blanket or something because he wasn't playing that night. And,
yeah, that's right. He was gonna drink the tea.
My
dog's having a dream over here. he was gonna drink the tea and sit in his warm jacket. Yeah. And I sat right next to him. But I didn't have a press conference about it.
I was gonna say you didn't have a press
conference. Yeah, right. Oh, right on, Shells. Well, we appreciate you hopping on.
My pleasure.
Keeping on over an hour here, man. And you got some stuff to do, get prepped for the season.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, I appreciate you guys having me on. I mean, this is great to catch up. I'm glad to see you guys are doing this and, you know, doing a good job of it. So thanks for having me as a guest.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Appreciate it so much, man.
Be well. If I can help you guys, let me know.
Oh, for sure. We will, man.
Thanks, man.
How's the yoga?
Yoga's great, man. Yeah. Yeah. Doing
so
a little teaching. I mean, it's kind of just like more just I don't know, it's like a passion
for you.
You know, I practice it, and there's like something interesting about teaching because you talk about being present, you talk about being flow, man. You cannot be not concentrated teaching yoga. You can hide it, you can lay in the weeds when you're practicing because your mind can, you know, wander or whatever else. But when you're teaching, man, you got to be in the zone because, you know, as soon as you drift off, you're losing cues and you're losing people. People are literally following your cues to their nervous system, and it's no joke.
It didn't work out well in ball hockey though. Shells, I was asking where that yoga was coming in because my man.
Yeah, how was it?
He was hurting. It was actually a great weekend.
It was great.
We couldn't believe the turnout. It was good. Awesome. But we were both hurting, Pops, because we ended up shorthanded, 4-on-4, full ice link, but on the court, and we had
a lot of running.
We had one sub in the final, and we lost in overtime. We almost. We actually.
But no one got hurt.
Well, we haven't ran. I hadn't ran like that. I don't even think I ever ran like that as a professional hockey player. That much running. You know what I mean? Like you're talking about tax. My knees are still.
Was it hot?
Inflamed from it. It was warm, but it was a breeze. It was actually a perfect day for it. Yeah. Day. Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Good.
Any hotter would have been fucking destructive.
Oh yeah. For sure.
But yeah,
we were actually,
it was no joke, man.
We never want to lose in anything, but they scored with a minute to go. We would have gone to a shootout. They scored with under a minute to go on a deflection. And I was almost just relieved. We were going to have to play again with five guys. And just, it wouldn't even been worth it to play in the final.
No. I couldn't have played another game.
Good. Good seeing you guys.
Yeah,
cool, man.
Thanks.
Be well.
Yeah, man, good luck with everything.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you soon.
See you, buddy.
That episode was brought to you by SettleMeyerSkateSharpening.com. For all your hockey needs, the best grind in town. And Toby Sticks, he's got the steel.
Oui.
Check him out at SettleMeyerSkateSharpening.com and Body Check Wellness. For all your CBD and functional mushroom needs, take the stress off, sleep better, feel better, bodycheckwellness.com. And a big thanks to our man, Jody Shelley.
Yes.
For hopping on episode 41 here.
Love that guy.
Yeah,
love that guy.
He's a solid dude, and man, what a warrior. You know, there's not too many guys you can think about that played the game that were as tough as he was, but as much of a gamer. I mean, you think of like Chief and him and maybe a couple other guys that come to mind as far as gamers every night, and he was one of them.
The Last Gladiators. Tough man. And a great guy, great locker room guy.
Yeah.
You guys were always my favorite because just the talking, you know, like sometimes benches get stale. Guys know that. But like Jody, even if he wasn't getting a ton of ice time, which he was with Torts, Yeah, like yeah, we talked about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, I'm sure he was still talking anyway, but he was always great to have. One, he was obviously very well respected as in his role. And, but he just always talked. If something was going on and someone wasn't behaving themselves, you know, he always had something to say, you know, just like you and a lot of guys that did your guy that had your guy's role. But he was a fun guy. He was a fun guy to go to dinner with. He was always really good to the staff. Got to have, there were nights where, you know, he knew maybe he wasn't in the next day. So we were able to let loose a little bit, you know, but a very, very, very professional, just a great pro, always took care of himself, was always doing extra in the weight room and stuff. This, I just remember seeing him do stuff after practice when, you know, everybody else is, you know, probably going to play a lot more than he was. But he was always doing that extra stuff, and he was just a true pro and just an absolute, like you said, warrior, man. Wow.
Yeah, you know, and for him to be able to play as long as he did the way he did, you know, he had to take care of himself. And, you know, just listening to him talk about his stint there in New York and just like little things in life, right? He's just like enjoying, you know, the moment, which is, I mean, seems like a pretty simple concept. It's hard to do. The fact that he took that opportunity and converted it into 3 more years, you know, with the Flyers and all that good stuff. But, you know, testament to him because he's got the right attitude. Obviously, being a TV personality and, you know, having the energy to do what he does now. I mean, he knows the game. Too. He's engaged. Yeah, he gets it and communicates well. So,
yeah,
appreciate him hopping on, man. He was good. It was nice to see him. I saw him at the Flyers alumni game there not too long ago in golf.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I hadn't seen him for a while, so it was nice to see him again. And glad he's doing well.
He does a hell of a job on TV as well. So
yeah, he does.
He's carved out a nice little gig for himself, but he deserves it because he's really good at it. So happy to get to talk to him. Happy to see him, and hopefully we'll be able to see him this year when the Blue Jackets come to town with our buddy Jay Voracek.
Yeah, no doubt. Looking forward to that. And that's a wrap. Episode 41 in the books. Check us out next week for episode 42. Stay safe, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.